Thank you, Jean-Paul, for inviting me, and this is a pleasure and the honor to be here in such a diverse audience. I'm a macroeconomist, so I belong to a minority here in this room. There are very few economists. See, I'm also interested in complexity. We economists interested in complexity are even fewer than the economists at large, because we are indeed a minority in the profession. So, apologies for somehow involving you into a discussion that has been on for years in the profession of economists. I am indeed speaking about models of a complex economy. Sorry for that. Is it working? Okay. So the goal of this presentation is to convince you that indeed the way in which we usually deal with the economy as a complex system, agent-based modeling, is a legitimate, adequate, and fruitful approach to macro dynamic analysis. This may seem obvious to you outside the profession, because in the economy out there, in the real world, is indeed a complex system. This is not obvious for the average economist. As I said, I'm a macroeconomist, so let me start from macro. Well, macro is an important part of the discipline, and the state of macro was not good before the global financial crisis. The reason for this is simple. We had a major tool for dealing with macroeconomic problems, which is this. Sorry for the acronym, this strange thing here, the New Keynesian, sorry, and it's not working. Okay, New Keynesian DSG model, New Keynesian Dynamic Stochastic General Equilibrium model. It's quite an important development in macroeconomics in the last, say, 30 years or so, and very much used in the profession. Unfortunately, this tool was unable to foresee the arrival of the global financial crisis and was hugely unsuccessful in forecasting developments of the macroeconomy after the global financial crisis. It missed the point repeatedly. It was wrong in forecasting systematically after the global financial crisis. The defense of macroeconomists that are using this tool is the following. By construction, these models are not fit to the task of predicting rare or extreme events. They are working well in normal times. They are unable to deal with the macroeconomic in abnormal times, such as the global financial crisis. They also add that the profession adjusted rapidly to the new challenge by introducing a number of variants of the New Keynesian DSG model, in particular the role of financial frictions. We are used to this kind of obscure wording, but the financial friction simply means any kind of departure from perfect competition, perfect information, and so on and so forth. It is due to the borrowing-lending relationship. Typically asymmetric information. The lender knows more than the borrower knows more than the lender on the quality of the investment project. This is a number of consequences on the working of the economy. And this can be indeed an important ingredient of any macroeconomic model to at least try to cope with the challenge of explaining a global financial crisis. Matter of fact, this model, at least in my opinion, are able to account for a deep recession, such as the so-called Great Recession that came after the global financial crisis, starting from a relatively small aggregate shock through a mechanism that is called the financial accelerator, but is not able to indeed forecast the coming of a financial crisis. You know the famous question by the Queen to the economist, why didn't you see it coming? The problem is that these models are, by construction, unable to replicate the boom and bust cycle of aggregate economic activity that is the inner mechanism of capitalism. In my view, and in the view of a minority of macroeconomists, large macroeconomic swings are indeed financially driven and endogenous, so to speak. They are not actually generated by shocks. And this is the inner dynamics of capitalism, and any macroeconomic model should try to capture this kind of inner dynamics. In the light of the inadequacy of this conceptual framework, there has been a sizable development of alternative frameworks that are indeed based on the complexity view of the macroeconomy. And the toolkit of these people is agent-based macro. I am one of the I'm actually into this kind of business. Rob Axtell is one of the pioneers in this area. In the complexity view, the macroeconomy is characterized by the interaction of a large number of heterogeneous agents. It is a complex adaptive system. If you ask me what is a complex adaptive system with a brief description, let me use this quotation from Paul Gurin-Schatz. Paul Gurin-Schatz is not fan of agent-based models, but he put forward the best definition of what an economy, a complex adaptive economy is. A modern economy is a complex web of interconnected parties, employees, firms, suppliers, consumers, banks, and financial intermediaries. Everyone is someone else's employee, customer, lender, etc. A sudden stop, such as COVID-19, can easily trigger a cascading chain of events fueled by individually rational but collectively catastrophic decisions. So, what you need is indeed a computational model. The methodology of agent-based models is free of the usual orthodox constraints, orthodox in the light of the taxonomy within the profession of economist. There is no need of a representative agent. There is no forced general equilibrium in the economy, and there is no search for a stable steady state. On the other hand, the problem of these models is that cannot be solved analytically and must be explored by simulation. These are inherently computational models. In the profession, the use of simulations to explore the properties of macroeconomic model is not welcome or not easily welcome. It is actually perceived with a sort of skepticism. We prefer to have theorems that can be proved, even if the premises or the assumptions are unrealistic, to relatively realistic models with no proper proof. Let me also point out that in the very some 70 years ago or so, 60 years ago, Simon had a prescient vision on this development. I think it's very, very nice. The very complexity that has made a theory of the decision-making process essential has made its construction exceedingly difficult. It seems almost utopian to suppose that we could put together a model of adaptive men that would compare in completeness with a simple model of classic economic men, the Homo economicus. The modern digital computer, this is back in 1959, has changed the situation radically. It provides us with a tool of research whose power is commensurate with the complexity of the phenomena we seek to understand. As economics finds it more and more necessary to understand and explain this equilibrium, as well as equilibrium, it will find an increasing use for this new tool and for communication with the sister sciences of psychology and sociology. This is certainly a prescient vision, but it takes a long time for the profession to adapt to or to incorporate these kind of ideas. What I want to do today, very briefly, is first of all to show you what is a macro agent-based model, and then discuss briefly the so-called micro foundations, the foundations of the macro model based upon microscopic behavior. And if I will have time, I will go through two examples, or at least one, of behavioral rules that are associated with microscopic behavior in this macro agent-based model, the demand for consumption goods on the part of a household and the supply of consumption goods on the part of the firms. There can be many other examples. We will discuss this thing at length in this paper that has been published in the Handbook of Computational Economics, Agent-Based Macroeconomics, with my co-author Herbert David. What is a macro agent-based model is essentially a model of the macroeconomy conceived as a complex adaptive system. Heterogeneity is a core of the model, and this comes from a variety of sources: skill, productivity, size, leverage, wealth, and so on and so forth. Heterogeneity is a very important part of the story, and is not obvious for economists, because the economists generally, macroeconomists generally rely upon the representative agent. Well, this is a sort of caricature of the discussion within the profession. There are also neoclassical ways of dealing with heterogeneity, but I will not go into the details. So aggregated macroeconomic variables, therefore, such as GDP, consumption, investment, and so on and so forth, are computed from the bottom up, meaning simply by summing individual quantities across agents, across different heterogeneous agents. How do we build macro agent-based models? The starting point is, of course, a population of heterogeneous agents. Then we go for a theory. So theory means essentially to associate a behavioral rule to demand and supply of a number of objects. There may be consumption goods, there may be labor, there may be credit, and so on and so forth. These behavioral rules are key in building and the exploration of this agent-based model. So behavioral rules are the microeconomic level. So this is essentially where macro foundations are indeed important. And the micro foundations that we use in agent-based models are generally different from the micro foundations that we find in standard macroeconomic models. Only when the theory has been the theoretical part of the story has been settled, we go for the codification, translate these rules into code lines, because the analytical solution, as I said, is impossible. And finally, we have the validation part of the story. We have to calibrate the parameters when we run simulations, and then we analyze the so-called emerging properties of the simulated data, both at the cross-sectional level, for instance, the distribution of firms according to size, and the macroeconomic level, GDP growth and fluctuations, inflation, unemployment, and so on and so forth. And then we compare the properties, the emerging properties of the artificial data generated by the model with the real-world stylized fact, the empirical reality. For instance, volatility and correlation of macro variables. The criterion for calibrating the model is to minimize the distance, so to speak, between the properties of the artificial time series and the properties of the empirical time series. So far, there's not been much in terms of estimation of the parameters. This is a new and exciting and extremely difficult stage of development of these models, but stay tuned, because there is interesting work in this area. What is the end result of these macro models, agent-based model? Well, you have the self-organization of aggregate variables towards a so-called quasi-steady state or steady growth equilibrium. Sometimes we call this a statistical equilibrium. This comes from different papers, and you can see these fluctuations that are quite irregular and very different from the type of fluctuation that you get out of a New Keynesian DSG model, where the economy is essentially in the steady state and is fluctuating only in as much as there is a major aggregate shock. If you have a positive shock, you have a boom, and if you have a negative shock, you have a recession, and the economy goes back to the steady state with some persistence. The macro agent-based model can also reproduce the cross-sectional evidence. These are the distribution of size in different papers. The cross-sectional evidence cannot be reproduced with standard macro models that do not have the this structure. Okay, there are many people working in this area, many different schools of thought, so to speak, many different frameworks. Research in this field is thriving, but the usual objection that we get from our colleagues in the profession is, aren't we into the wild? You are too undisciplined. Too many people doing too many things, starting from too many diverse assumptions, and so on and so forth, which is a good, sufficient reason for discarding the results that these models are indeed generating from the usual point of view. What I'm trying to do is to show that digging deeper, we can find common threads. Even if there are different people doing different things, there are common sources, common roots, so to speak. A degree of kinship between existing macro agent-based framework. I'm not going into the details, but this is an important part of the story. So we are not into the wilderness. Above all, assumptions and protocols that are routinely used in these models may be different, but are not alien to the way of thinking of the average economist. This is a particular point that I want to make. It is not the conventional wisdom within the community of agent-based modelers. Most of my colleagues within the community of agent-based model think that indeed the assumptions and the methodologies that are used are completely alien and alternative to the mainstream, quotation mark. My point is that the mainstream is a rugged landscape. There are many different types of ways of being mainstream. Sometimes it is useful and fruitful for people into the agent-based community to borrow ideas and possibly to exchange ideas with the mainstream. The basic architecture of macro agent-based model is this one. You have households that are differentiated, for instance, in terms of income and wealth. Then you have firms. In some models, the firms are divided into two groups, the consumption goods producer and the capital goods producer. Consumption goods producer are buying capital goods from K producer and then sell consumption goods to household through the consumption market. Households are supplying labor to the firms. And then there are banks. Banks are usually getting deposits from households and extending loans to firms. You can do stylized models in which some of these features are absent. Jean-Philippe has produced a streamlined agent-based model, even simpler models than this one, by, for instance, assuming that consumption goods are produced only by means of labor. You can even get rid of the credit market if you want. Generally speaking, however, this is an important part of the story because, as I said, financial frictions are an important part of any kind of macroeconomic development. So if you think of that architecture, you can have different markets. Here I'm listing the markets on the rows. And you have different agents, and listing the agents on the columns. And in any cell, you can find, for instance, the agent in the market, and you find it whether it is on the demand side or the supply side of the market. For instance, here, households are in the consumption goods market, and they are in the demand side. Here, they are firms. Firms that produce consumption goods, they are in the supply, on the supply side. What I'm trying to do is to show you that, for instance, I will simply show you how agent-based modelers are indeed setting the rules for consumption on the part of households and production of consumption goods on the part of firms, comparing the neoclassical and the mainstream and the alternative methodology. But before doing this, before getting into this detail, let me simply briefly list what are the micro foundation for agent-based modeler. Now, micro foundation are important for both the mainstream and the agent-based modeler, because our idea is that somehow the macro developments, the emerging properties of macro time series depend very much on the behavior at the microeconomic level. In agent-based model, however, we start from the assumption that agents are heterogeneous, so we can get rid from the very beginning, get rid of the representative agent. Now, the representative agent assumption has played an important role in development of macro, because it is the figment of our imagination that is important to get rid of the problems of aggregation. When you have too many different and heterogeneous agents, you have to aggregate them, and aggregation is a very complicated, difficult thing in economics. So what you do, you go back to the representative agent, and the problem is not there from the start. Of course, the representative agent is very debatable and controversial, to use a euphemism, since the heterogeneity is ineradicable from the feature of the real world. Agent-based macroeconomists can get rid of the representative agent by simply tracking the evolution over time of the distribution of agents and adopt the bottom-up perspective that I touched upon previously. Second point, the micro foundation for agent-based model does not coincide with methodological individualism, with the homo economicus. In the mainstream, most of the times, the issue is behavioral rules should follow from so-called first principles, so an optimization problem. That, in the case of macro, may be a quite complex issue. So you have to maximize, for instance, expected utility over an infinite horizon, subject to a sequence of budget constraints. In agent-based model, this is not the case. Agents are not global optimizers. Most of my colleagues in the community prefer to simply substitute optimal behavioral rules that come from the mainstream New Keynesian DSG model with heuristics, rules of thumb. And these rules of thumb are based essentially in behavioral economics. Simon was one of the pioneers of this literature on behavioral economics, and Kahneman and Tversky are two Nobel Prize winners in this area. In my opinion, however, in some cases, it is reasonable also to assume that agents can be local or myopic optimizer, not global, but local and myopic optimizer. So some rules may be also optimal. Third point, very important, there is no imposition of general equilibrium from the start of the analysis. So agent-based modelers allow for out-of-equilibrium dynamics, which is very far from the standard approach in the mainstream. However, these models tend to a sort of spontaneous order by means of self-organization, as I showed you before. What are the sources of inspiration for the micro-foundation of agent-based model? The most important part is data, big and small. The agent-based modelers are proud of actually saying that behavioral assumptions are data-driven. For instance, Doyne Farmer is one of the person that is very much into this way of calibrating the model. There is a second source of inspiration, which is the behavioral and experimental evidence. The evidence that we can collect in the lab with human subjects by exploring their behavior when they have to solve a decision problem, is a source of inspiration for the Micro Foundation agent-based model. The third inspiration is managerial science. We economists live close to expert in management science, but we don't talk much to each other. Some of us has indeed done the following, which is somehow obvious if you want. Suppose that you want to study how prices are set by firms. You can start from a very simple calculation coming from first principle, or you go to the expert in managerial science and ask him what is the theory that you have to describe the behavior of firms in setting the price, which in turn is very close to the way in which firms actually set the price. There is another source, however. This is my point, and this is one of the reasons I distance myself from some of my colleagues in the agent-based community. I do think that agent-based models also rely sometimes heavily on existing microeconomic theory, both orthodox and heterodox. There is heterodox economic theory, which goes under the name of classical, Schumpeterian, Keynesian, and post-Keynesian, and most of the agent-based models are very fond of this. But in some cases, you can find a source of inspiration also in the existing mainstream micro-foundations. Let me give you an example. As I said, if you want to explain the origin and the development of the global financial crisis, sometimes you have somehow by construction, you had to take very much on board the issue of financial frictions, the role of borrowing-lending relationship in generating macroeconomic developments. Now, this issue of financial frictions has been developed in the macroeconomic literature starting from the late 80s. Very much in advance with respect to the global financial crisis. And there are different frameworks that are indeed present in the literature. After the global financial crisis and this burgeoning literature on New Keynesian DLG models plus financial frictions, some economists, not myself, but Robert Hall, so a member of the mainstream, said, well, this is another epicycle that you New Keynesian DLG people have invented to reconcile the standard model, your Ptolemaic standard model of the macroeconomy with reality. Well, maybe this is an epicycle, and this is the reason why it has been so widely used after 2008 is indeed to support of the New Keynesian DLG model. However, my point is that the stories that are attached to financial frictions, these keywords may mean nothing to you, but they're very important for the macroeconomist, or maybe they simply give you an idea of what is going on. These stories, the stories that are associated with financial frictions, are indeed the behavioral component of any kind of important model of the macroeconomy. That's why I would say that they must be incorporated in sophisticated agent-based models. So this is my point. My point is that, in a sense, a conversation should occur within the profession that may be certainly helpful for agent-based modeler, and I hope, at least in the future, also for mainstream modeler. I will simply show you a couple of examples of the relationship between behavioral rules coming from the mainstream and behavioral rules in the agent-based model, if I have enough time.
10 minutes.
10 minutes? Okay. I will show you at least the basic ideas. Okay. For each of these behavioral rules, demand for consumption goods, supply of consumption goods, probably I will not be able to go through the supply of consumption goods, I will present, compare and contrast the standard microfoundation and the general behavioral rule that you can find in most agent-based models. This general behavior rule can then be specified in different ways depending on the schools of thought. So this is the cell that I will focus on. And let me start from the standard microfoundation. The idea that you find in the SG model, generally speaking, is that you have a representative household. So all the households are the same, for instance, in terms of wealth. And they have a problem which is of two-stage budgeting. The first stage consists in choosing the aggregate consumption. This is the aggregate consumption of household H at time T. And to choose aggregate consumption, what they do is to solve an optimization problem. What kind of optimization problem? They have to maximize expected lifetime utility over an horizon, which is usually infinite, subject to the intertemporal budget constraint. Out of this problem, which is not easy, not easy for an economist, probably more difficult for the average household out there, they get the consumption Euler equation, and from the consumption Euler equation, you get the consumption optimal consumption expenditure. The second stage consists in choosing the composition of the basket of consumption goods in terms of varieties. You have to decide how much of this consumption basket consists of bread, of neckties, and so on and so forth. Up to the number of varieties that you find, and there is a one-to-one correspondence between the number of varieties and the number of producer. The first stage, how do agents choose the consumption budget? Remember that we get to the consumption Euler equation. You play a bit with the algebra and you end up with this thing here, equation one, which is the prototypical life cycle permanent income consumption function. The consumption basket, the aggregate size of consumption expenditure is equal to the so-called permanent income. And this is proportional, according to the coefficient R, to the sum of financial wealth and human wealth. Financial wealth is, of course, obvious. It is the amount of assets that the household has. What is the human wealth? Human wealth is the discounted sum of future income accrued to the household. So when the household is deciding how much to consume, it is indeed computing the discounted sum of future income that it will get, and this will be a part of the story here. Then the second stage, how to determine the demand for each variety. Believe me, there is a number of analytical steps that I'm, of course, skipping. At the end of the day, the household's demand, optimal demand for each good, is equal to the relative price, the price of the good with respect to the average price, and raised to the power minus epsilon the elasticity of demand, times aggregate consumption divided by the number of firms. If you sum across households, you have the demand of good I, that the firm producing good I is facing in the market. So this is something that the firm knows. This is the something that the firm knows. It is acting as a small monopolist in its own captive market and is maximizing profits in order to get an optimal point on this demand function here. Okay, what are the AB microfoundation? You browse across the number of papers and you end up, essentially, this is at least my interpretation, you end up with an approach which is quite similar. You have still two stages of decision. In the first one, each household is setting the consumption budget according to a behavioral rule that is generally not optimal, is not grounded in an optimization problem. The second stage consists in choosing the variety. The household has to decide how much to allocate the consumption budget to each variety, so how much to consume of each good. So there is a parallel here. If you go into the details, you see the following. The general rule that I can find in many of the models that are indeed circulating in this literature, well, the general rule is quite similar to the life cycle for permanent income equation that you saw before, even if it is not grounded in an optimal decision-making process. Once again, consumption of household age depends on human wealth and financial wealth. CH and CF are propensities to consume. But the point is that this thing here, the human wealth, is obtained by algorithm, an adaptive algorithm that is taking into account past income, not future income. These agents here are not, in these models, are not forward-looking, they are essentially backward-looking. There can be different specific rules adopted in different macro-agent-based models that can be obtained from four by means of appropriate parameter restrictions. For instance, this is what happens in a paper that we published some years ago. We have this specification here. And then this thing here is indeed weighted average of current and past income, this thing here. So that's what happens. This first term here is the dependence of consumption of current income. Now, we are taking into account the role of the past in determining consumption here. Okay. Some of our colleagues are simply setting this memory parameter equal to zero, so they are focusing only on present income. This is the case, for instance, of this group of people in Sant'Anna, in Pisa. As to the second, skip this thing. As to the second stage, the demand for each variety, the general rule, once again, in these models is essentially such that the consumption of each variety depends on the price of each and every consumption good that is produced in this economy and on aggregate consumption. This is quite similar, if you want, even if it is not coming from the same source, to the Dixie-Stiglitz demand function. For instance, in this model, the household is visiting a number of firms, is ranking the firms according to the price, and this purchasing variety is starting from the firm that is charging the lowest price. So there is an implicit negative elasticity of demand with respect to the price. So the demand for variety is decreasing with the price charged by the firm relative to the price charged by the competitors, as in the standard micro foundation. So I don't have time to go through the supply of consumption goods, but I could show you something similar in a sense. The pattern is the same. So some reliance on the knowledge in microeconomic theory that has been developed at the level of the mainstream. Let me go rapidly to the conclusion. The conclusion is the following. If we, as agent-based model, want to be accepted, so to speak, or to be capable of accessing the type of audience that is available to the mainstream, what we have to do is to convince the profession that we have a model that is indeed capable of reproducing new and important facts with a more interesting model. Sometimes our models are too complicated. They are so complex that people do not understand them. They don't succeed in getting an interesting narrative from it. So what we have to aim at is a sort of macro agent-based workhorse, something that can be comparable at least to the standard New Keynesian DIG framework. There is a long way to go because in terms of estimation, forecasting, expectations, policy experiments, so on and so forth, we are indeed lagging behind, but this is something that is perfectly understandable. The the time of research effort and grants that are indeed devoted to this kind of approach is orders of magnitude smaller than that you can find in the mainstream. So let me finish with Machado. Son tú suelas el camino y nada más. No hay camino, se hace camino al andar. Grazie.